He wore red shirt and pants. I should have remembered that.
What do you want, Yovel?
To talk.
Why?
Before the blasters open up, you got no chance in there, Carter.
So why not talk? Just come ahead.
Sure. Bullet tricks like that. I'll send in my right-hand man and one other. See if you can hear some good sense for both of us.
Send him in.
No tricks? We had a deal here, Carter? Be a blood price if you don't deal right.
Send him in.
Want me to go out and try and chill that red-clothed bastard and his wag?
Nah, let's hear what they gotta say. Might find out more than they intend.
Hotter than a fucking hobs of hell out here. Can I send him in?
Yeah, but only two.
Keep him covered, and make sure the watch is alert on the other sides. I trust Yovel about as far as I can piss molasses.
The senior of the two emissaries was a stocky man in his mid-30s, with slanted eyes and a totally bald head. He wore an olive-green satin blouse tucked into filthy white pants. His feet were bare. He had a superb flintlock pistol, beautifully engraved, tucked into his belt. It was one of the oldest blasters that Ryan had ever seen. His name was Kim. The other pirate was a young woman, barely out of her teens. Her name was Meg, and she stood over 6 feet tall. Her eyes were so deep a brown that they verged on black. She wore a divided skirt in cerise cotton and an embroidered blouse, and like Kim, she was barefoot. In her wide leather belt, she carried a nondescript automatic that had obviously been pieced together from 4 or 5 other guns. Meg would have been beautiful if it hadn't been for the fact that someone had taken a broken bottle to her face with murderous effect. The first blow had circled her left eye, surrounding it with a vivid, puckered scar, while the second had removed part of the side of her nose and gouged away the corner of her mouth, giving her a permanent, twisted smile. But her body had a lithe, feral grace that instantly attracted Ryan's passing interest. The thought crossed his mind that the young woman would be just as likely to slice off a man's genitals as to make love. She caught the expression on his face and spat in the sand at his feet.
Easy, Meg. Cap don't like us do that sort of thing here.
Then he can keep his fucking pity to himself. Man's got like he to be careful.
Carter the man here say Cap Yovel. White coat just peace sitting down like young girly.
Mark Tomlin was extremely reluctant to leave Ryan with the two pirates, but eventually agreed to move away with Christy and the others. When Kim and Meg were alone with Ryan, Kim assumed a confidential grin.
Cap say you the man with the clever brain, Ryan. Say me to say to you we got close to 50 blasters.
We got near that.
You don't got the war wag, Cap Carter.
Ryan hoped he'd concealed his shock at that. If it was true, then it was seriously bad news. The Institute was moderately defensible against an attack from skirmishing guerrillas, but a war wag would wipe the walls away and chill anyone who wasn't armed with some grenades or a mortar.
We got the power to handle a wag. Anyway, I'll believe that when I see it.
Kim smiled, showing a golden tooth at the front.
Listen to me and you don't see it. You and your friends be long gone.
Get to it, for fuck's sake. I've fallen to sleep while I wait.
We give up the place to you and sacrifice Tomlin and his people and we walk free? Is that it?
Ryan noticed that Kim had a coiled purple dragon tattooed on the back of his right wrist.
Yep, that's it. Good and easy, Cap Carter. Why we worry about little white coats? We men of blood, Cap Carter. You know Cap Yovel say shame to worry about little others. Hey, man, they're going to die anyways up.
He could be right.
You do it?
Tell Yovel I'll let him know within the hour.
Again the golden smile and a pat on the arm, like a drinking companion.
But I say you guys say good plan?
Say that.
Thank fuck. Pooh. Shame we don't get away to talk secret and whisper with you, Carter.
The word sent a chill down Ryan's spine.
Yeah, we could have made some beautiful music together, sweetheart.
Oh, fuck you.
And now we go on back, Cap Carter, safe under the flag of truce, yeah?
Sure.
Ryan walked with them back to the gate, where he could see the battered wag still waiting. There was a hand dangling from the window, holding a cigarette, the fringe of the scarlet sleeve showing bright against the dull metal. Yovel bellowed out when he saw his people.
You agreed the deal I gave you, Carter?
Both Meg and Kim faced away from the Institute, toward their hidden leader. JB, Christy and the others stood with Tomlin, a few yards away to the right, safe behind the defensive wall.
Like you said, deals are for the little people, Yeovil.
Ryan drew the Sig Sauer from its holster and put a single 9mm round in the back of Kim's neck. The young woman was lightning quick, starting to turn, but Ryan dropped her with a second bullet through the back of her skull.
My sweet lord.
It was a cold and calculated murder. It can only increase their anger and determination to wipe us all out to the last man.
Tomlin was trembling with a potent mixture of anger and fear. Nobody else had said anything as the bodies dropped, spurting blood into the thirsty sand. Yeovil himself had made no response, except crashing the wagon to gear and driving quickly off, surrounded by a drifting shroud of dust. Ryan nodded at Tomlin, using the push-button mag release and replacing the two spent rounds.
I hear you.
Murderer!
You triple stoop!
Ryan spun so fast that the scientist took several stumbling steps away from him, nearly putting his foot right in the clotted puddle of blood and brains. Without Ryan even realizing it, the Sig Sauer was somehow in his hand again.
No.
Ryan took a slow breath and closed his eye for a moment, nodding at what had nearly happened. He reholstered the blaster for a second time.
Tomlin, I don't know how you've managed to survive as long as you have. Yeovil's coming in to try and take this place. I don't know why. Maybe we'll never know why. It would make a good base for raiding down south to the far Indies.
They came under a flag of truce. I owe you my life, Ryan, many times over. But I must confess that I find it devilish hard to justify what you've just done. You gunned down a man and a woman in the very coldest of blood. You shot them both in the back.
Doc, all of you. This isn't some fucking game of white and black and winners and losers and being caught on the wrong side. This is life for the winners and death for everyone else.
They have a lot more weapon power and trained chillers than we do. Now they've got two less. One of them was Yeovil's second in command.
I heard what he said. He said that we could all go free from here. Wasn't that a chance to walk free?
Now you got some excuse, Michael. You weren't born and raised in this world. Listen. Listen to me. Yeovil just wanted to try it on. To try and trick us. He'd have found a way of ambushing us once we were outside the walls. And then Tomlin and Miranda and every living soul here would have got to be very dead very quickly. Now, Yeovil will be that less confident. He lost two more. Played them as cards and they got taken out.
Suppose you're wrong, Ryan.
If I'm right, we got a small chance more than we did before. If I'm wrong, then we're no worse off. At least we're still all alive.
Late in the afternoon, three mortar shells came howling in from the north. Their dark shapes, silhouetted against a golden sky, fell in a parabolic curve from the south of the Institute. One missed badly, overshooting by at least 200 yards, exploding in the dunes with an insignificant pillar of dust. The second one landed at the rear of the complex of the buildings, knocking a hole through the roof of some abandoned kitchens and failing to detonate. When JB examined it later, he found that it was an old implode gren that had wings crudely welded on to try to turn it into a shell. The third of the missiles hit near the quayside. Chuck Sobolski was the only person anywhere near it, walking to check on the guards who were on watch at the seaward side of the Institute. Splinters of shrapnel tore into his knees and lower legs, ripping them apart. By the time anyone got to him, he'd bled to death. Supper was a subdued meal. Though Ryan didn't believe that the gang of killers would attack during the hours of darkness, he wasn't prepared to risk his life on it. So sentries were posted, and Miranda sent out her dolphin scouts on a night mission. The two Bobs brought in tureens of an excellent chowder, filled with bite-sized chunks of fresh and smoked fish. But the bread was stale, baked 2 days earlier, following on Ryan's order that all fires were to be extinguished, except those in brief and immediate use for providing a hot breakfast and a hot supper.
Dessert's a little on the thin side tonight as well. Oatmeal cooked in milk, then soaked in honey and quick-fried, served with some strawberry jelly.
We're running out of eggs as well. Wish those pirates would attack and get it over with, and then we could get some decent food again.
Could boil some fat back and a few beans if anyone's still in need of some nourishment. Perhaps after all that killing, Mr. Carter, all that energy and all of that reckless bravery must take it out of a person.
Christy laid her hand on Ryan's arm, feeling the muscles jumping with suppressed anger. She looked at the two men.
I'd go now, unless you want to be picking your teeth up off the floor. Thanks for the food.
Doc broke the moment of tension, standing and picking up the metal ladle in the larger of the tureens. He took off the lid with his other hand.
Ah, that brings back so many good